What if the world stole your voice and made millions selling your silence? In the scarcity signal, the manipulator returns, only to find he's been turned into a myth, weaponized, commodified, and repackaged for the masses. His own strategies now train influencers. His discarded voice whispers through AI algorithms. And the ghost he buried long ago? She's back, but no longer human. Trapped inside a simulation of his sins, he's forced to relive the manipulations that made him and the betrayals that might unmake him. But there's one move left, one final twist. He won't reclaim the narrative. He'll corrupt it, from the inside out. Inside the mind of a master manipulator returns. And this time, he's not looking for power. He's looking for collapse. If you think you've heard it all, you haven't. Hit follow on your favorite platform now, because the next story might just change the way you see everything. Don't miss a single twisted turn. The first scent of faith. They always arrive in white, pressed linen robes clinging to the sweat of newly baptized flesh, eyes wide and red-rimmed like they just walked out of a funeral and called it a rebirth. That was my first red flag. Nobody walks into salvation without bleeding somewhere. Especially not here. The Oasis wasn't a church. It was a brand. A curated convergence of spiritual marketing and psychological coercion. Its sermons were stitched with dopamine, timed like TED Talks, and engineered in soundproof studios with perfect acoustics. The acoustics mattered. Truth didn't echo, but persuasion did. I came in through the back. I always do. Back doors were made for men like me. The invisible. The orchestral. The ones who manipulate from behind the velvet. Security let me through without a word. I'd written the scripts that taught them silence. Inside, the main atrium pulsed with soft gold light, like someone had cracked heaven open and flooded the ceiling. A woman with moon-white braids stood on a platform, arms lifted, her voice trembling like glass. Her sermon wasn't a sermon. It was a performance. Choreographed grief. Manufactured awe. She spoke of cleansing frequencies, celestial realignment, and reversing spiritual scarcity. I smiled. She was using my language. My old scripts. Repurposed. Polished. Repackaged for a more desperate audience. This wasn't religion. It was scarcity psychology. And it worked. I came to infiltrate, to reshape the narrative, to manipulate the manipulators. But as I stood at the edge of that manufactured holy light, something strange started to coil in my stomach, not fear, not guilt, recognition. The sermon ended. Applause swelled like a wave, crashing down with orchestrated passion. And in that moment, the lights dimmed, the air cooled, and the screen behind her flickered with a phrase I'd written 5 years ago for a doomed campaign that cost a man his family. Your emptiness is your offering. My mind raced. Why here? Why now? And more importantly, who was watching me this time? The room emptied slowly, like steam escaping a cracked kettle. People lingered in silence, some sobbing into woven handkerchiefs embroidered with affirmations. You are already whole. Your shadow is sacred. It was all branding. All of it. Even their grief had a logo now. I stayed in the shadows, watching the exit paths. They exited in rows, like trained cells from a larger organism. It was impressive. The crowd behavior had been finely engineered, group dynamics perfected to respond to lighting cues and voice modulations. As I scanned the room, I saw something else. Surveillance nodes, tiny black domes in the corners that weren't listed in the building schematics I'd reviewed. Someone was logging every movement, every glance, every facial twitch. Not for safety, for data. I moved toward the side corridor marked staff only. My badge, forged from a scan I'd stolen weeks ago, lit green. The door hissed open. Behind it, the spine of the cult's nervous system. The hallway was sterile, server room lighting, icy blue, humming with electricity. Screens displayed behavior analytics in real time. Facial recognition. Body language scoring. Emotional spikes color-coded in red, yellow, and blue. They weren't healing people. They were dissecting them, quantifying them. A man in a charcoal tunic glanced up from one of the screens. His eyes narrowed. You're not supposed to be down here. I smiled, calm as arsenic. I'm exactly where I'm meant to be. He hesitated. I could see his brain firing off behavioral psychology protocols. Assess the threat. Confirm authority. Challenge subtly. Which unit are you assigned to? Mitigation, I replied smoothly. Ethical standards and body intelligence auditing. We're doing a surprise sweep of your node. He didn't believe me, but he didn't call anyone either. That was the beauty of manipulative personalities. They second-guess their gut, then pretend it's logic. I walked past him and into the main analytics chamber. There it was, the pulse table. A curved glass display lit with real-time emotional decision-making patterns, overlaying prayer sessions, meditation groups, confessions. All mapped. All monetized. And they're flashing at the bottom of one data cluster. Sarah K. Deep behavioral dive, flagged level 6 infiltration risk. My spine chilled. She wasn't just here. She had been here for months. Watching me. This wasn't infiltration. It was entrapment. And suddenly, the server room began to feel a lot more like a creaking crypt. I leaned over the pulse table, my fingers hovering above the data stream labeled Sarah K. It pulsed in a slow, violet rhythm, coded differently than the others. While most clusters flickered between anxiety, relief, and suggestion, hers read like static, unreadable, untethered. She wasn't being analyzed. She was reverse engineering the system. I pulled the file open, bypassing the security node with a code I'd lifted from a disgraced ex-consultant in Prague. What spilled out wasn't just data. It was surveillance on me, timestamps, transcribed conversations, microexpressions decoded in 0.4-second loops. Even voice inflection graphs of past manipulations I'd performed under pseudonyms. My life, repackaged as a case study. She was studying me the way I used to study others. I sat down. The hum of the server racks behind me suddenly sounded louder, harsher, more judgmental. Something inside my chest tightened. Not fear, not yet, but the distant echo of exposure. That familiar itch beneath the skin when a mask begins to slip. I tapped another file. Session 41, subject, narrator. Authored by SK. My thumb hovered. I tapped play. Her voice, soft, clear, surgical. He believes his skill set makes him untouchable. But like all true manipulators, he's terrified of stillness. Silence. That's where the fractures begin. The scar tissue. The childhood tells. If I can insert doubt, subtly, rhythmically, he'll lose his grip on the narrative he tells himself. This isn't revenge. It's a return. My breath caught in my throat. I knew this room, knew these tools, but I didn't know this version of her. The Sarah who manipulated through emotional stillness, who weaponized silence as a scalpel. I stood, heart pounding like I'd just swallowed glass. I had to get out. I had to breathe. The hallway twisted as I moved. Every step felt foreign. My limbs operated on delay, like my own body had joined the conspiracy. And then, without warning, the overhead speakers clicked on and a voice whispered in tones only I would recognize. Your memory is not the truth. It's a carefully curated tale, just like your victims. I stopped cold. Not because it wasn't true, but because it was my voice, recorded from a speech I gave a decade ago to a private think tank on audio manipulation and cognitive bias. Only one person had access to that archive. Sarah. The trap wasn't in the room. It was in my mind. I stumbled into the side stairwell, gripping the rail like a lifeline. The walls felt closer than they should have. Angles curved when they used to be straight. Lights hummed too loud, like they were whispering secrets I wasn't supposed to hear. Somewhere between the second and third floor, I saw her. Or something shaped like her. She stood at the landing, a barefoot woman in a white robe, backlit by an amber glow leaking through stained glass. Her face was turned away, but I knew the posture. The deliberate stillness. The weaponized calm. Sarah, I whispered, though I already knew it wasn't her. She didn't respond. Just stood there like a statue carved from memory. I blinked, and she was gone. What remained was a symbol burned into the stairwell wall. One I recognized from old field notes on cult iconography and influence psychology. A spiral with 6 radial lines, used to represent psychological recursion. A loop of thought that devours itself. I kept moving, faster now, desperate for cold air and something real. The staff exit was just ahead, a fire door marked East Courtyard, the path I'd mapped weeks ago. My keycard buzzed red. Access denied. Pathway restricted. No, that wasn't possible. I'd built the override myself. Triple-coded with decoy syntax. I tried again. Red. A soft chime echoed through the hallway, and above me a speaker crackled. Manipulation without truth is theater. Manipulation with truth? That's where transformation lives. My heart stopped. That line. That exact phrase. I wrote it in the margin of an old training doc. One I'd shredded and burned after a leadership scenario workshop that went too far and left a junior analyst hospitalized. No one had access to that phrase. Unless my own voice spoke again, clearer this time. Exit attempts are a pattern of resistance. Mitigation requires reorientation. The fire door clicked open. Behind it, darkness. No courtyard. No moonlight. Just the subtle whir of air vents and something breathing behind the veil. I took a step back. Then two. And that's when I saw it. Etched into the floor at the threshold. X's and O's. Welcome back, player one. I staggered. The phrase was from my childhood. From an old, abandoned test I'd created when I was 10, trying to see if my mother would respond differently to love notes disguised as games. She never did. But someone else remembered. And now, they were using my own cognitive techniques against me. This wasn't just entrapment. It was scenario exploration. And I was the experiment. I stepped through the door. The darkness inside wasn't total. It glowed faintly, as if the shadows were lit from beneath. My footfalls echoed too long, like the room was larger than it should be, but muffled at the edges by something soft. Something familiar. The lights came on, and my breath caught. It was my bedroom. Not a recreation. Not a close attempt. It was my childhood bedroom. Down to the chipped paint on the dresser corner, where I'd slammed it shut during a tantrum. Down to the exact misalignment of the blinds that never quite shut out the moonlight. My drawings taped to the wall. X's and O's, spirals, fragmented stick figures bleeding red crayon. A smell hit me, dust, ink, and the ghost of rage. My knees gave. I sat on the edge of the bed, trying to convince myself this was an illusion. A hallucination brought on by adrenaline, disorientation, audio cues primed to trigger deep emotional recall. But then I looked at the desk and saw the box. The same wooden box I'd buried beneath floorboards after my father died. The one no one knew existed. Inside were the letters I wrote to no one. Angry, blistering, pathetic little documents of a boy trying to explain human dynamics to a god that never answered. I opened it. Every letter was here. Chronologically ordered. Indexed. With notes in the margins. Someone had annotated my childhood grief like it was a behavioral psychology thesis. There was a new letter on top. One I didn't write. I picked it up. You're not here to manipulate anymore. You're here to remember. We are going to unmake your influence voice, one deception at a time. My vision blurred. My hands trembled. I hadn't been this undone in years. A soft click came from behind me. I turned. A figure stood in the doorway. Barefoot. Shadowed. But not Sarah. This one was taller. Slower. And when he spoke, the voice was low, gravel-laced, and used a name I hadn't heard since the day I erased it from every system that ever held it. Hello, Elijah. My entire spine locked. No one was supposed to know that name. Not even Sarah. The lights cut. Darkness swallowed everything. And in the silence, the breathing stopped feeling external. It was mine. Only it wasn't calm. It was terrified. The labyrinth that whispers back. There was no waking. Just a slow fade-in from static and dark vibrations. My breath came in short bursts, panic clawing at my ribs like something ancient trying to burrow out. The air smelled like filtered chemicals and childhood decay. I was no longer in the room. I was on the floor of what looked like a minimalist therapy chamber. White walls. Cushioned edges. No visible doors. Just a ceiling panel that pulsed every 10 seconds like a machine breathing above me. Someone had undressed me. Not entirely. Just enough to signal control. I sat up slowly, chest tight. On the far wall, in perfect black ink, a phrase was scrawled in familiar handwriting. Tell me a story where you weren't the villain. It hit me like a brick. Because I couldn't. Not one that was true. My name wasn't spoken again. Not Elijah. Not even the aliases. The room didn't need to call me anything anymore. It had rewritten the premise. The role. This wasn't about extraction. It was about deconstruction. I moved to the center of the room and touched the inked wall. It wasn't paint. It was blood. Human or synthetic, I couldn't tell. But it had dried too perfectly, as if applied by someone with both surgical precision and an emotional grudge. A screen slid out of the wall. Silent. Pale. Then flickered to life. My face. Not recent. Not polished. A security camera still from the night in Berlin. the night I orchestrated a corporate smear campaign that led to two deaths and a stock collapse. A face caught mid-smirk. Cold. Smug. Hollow. Then a voice, female. Not Sarah. Cognitive misalignment recognized. Emotional deflection at 78%. Suggesting scenario recalibration. Suddenly, the ceiling pulsed harder. Loud, rhythmic. The floor shifted beneath me. And then the screen changed again, this time showing a memory I hadn't granted permission to exist. I was 5, in a crawl space, listening to my parents scream, a broken mug at my feet, my hands bleeding. I wasn't crying. I was smiling. I staggered backward. This wasn't therapy. This was influence engineering. And it was working. The floor stopped moving. I was on my knees, breath shallow, heart kicking inside my ribs like it wanted out. The ceiling light dimmed to an amber hue, the color of false comfort. I crawled backward against the wall and pressed my spine to it like I could somehow absorb stability through bone. Then came the click. The screen changed again. This time, it showed my mother. Not the polished image I'd photoshopped in old dossiers. The real one. Greasy hair. Purple robe. Cigarette burns on the table behind her. Her voice came before her face did. He was always quiet, but that didn't mean innocent. Don't be fooled by that stillness. That's where the cold starts. I knew the clip. It was from a sealed custody deposition during my expungement at 17. No system should have had access. Unless someone had broken into my buried bylines, the archive I erased from existence. Then came a new voice. Male. Detached. Synthesized. Not cruel. Worse, clinical. Variable. Initiate reconstruction protocol. Memory. Mother. Kitchen. Age 9. Begin vocal narrative. What? Begin narrative. The wall pulsed red. My mouth moved before my mind caught up. She was making spaghetti. I think. The sauce burned. She screamed. I knocked the pot over by mistake. She said I did it on purpose. Correction. You switched off the timer. Why? I blinked. The memory shifted. The image adjusted. And I saw it clearly. I had turned off the timer. Not as sabotage. Just curiosity. I wanted to see if she'd notice. I wanted to see if consequences matched action. A behavioral experiment. I was 9. I wanted to test something, I admitted. What were you testing, variable? If pain came from randomness or rules. Then the screen split into two timelines. What happened? What you told yourself. They didn't match. Something cracked deep in my chest. Not physical. Something older. Something buried. Then the voice again. Variable. Emotional suppression detected. Scenario will now proceed with correctional framing. The walls darkened. Floor softened. And the next memory loaded. Me, age 16. A girl crying in the hallway. My hand on her shoulder. Her phone missing. I knew what came next. This one I couldn't explain away. But they were going to make me try. The hallway scene froze in digital stasis. Then it began to move, slow, grainy playback, like a dream wrapped in static. Me, age 16, leaning over her. She was crying. Her mascara streaked across her cheeks like war paint. Her phone had just gone missing, and everyone knew I was the last person seen near her locker. But there I was, hand on her shoulder, whispering something meant to comfort. Something rehearsed. The synthesized voice returned. Begin vocal reflection. Event, Talia. Locker incident. Age 16. I clenched my fists. It wasn't what it looked like. What did it look like, variable? It looked manipulative. Was it? Silence. The screen zoomed in on my face in the memory. The tilt of my head. The relaxed jaw. The way I held eye contact. Not long enough to intimidate, just long enough to control the room. I spoke slowly. She liked me. She looked for reasons to be near me. I gave her one. You manufactured need. Define intent. I closed my eyes. Behind my lids, the strategy map reappeared. My internal diagram of entry points. Emotional triggers, attention cues, trauma gaps I could fill with charm. I wanted access, I whispered. To her. To what she represented. Define representation. Power. Naivety. The ability to forget guilt. Another silence. Then a new display unfolded. Split screens showing other Talias. Different girls. Different schools. Different expressions, but always the same posture. Vulnerability framed. Captured. Managed. This is how you engineered safety. Through simulation. Through story. The walls pulsed. A mirror emerged on the opposite side of the room. but when I stood in front of it, I wasn't there. No reflection. No body. Just the clothes. Variable, the voice said. Identity conflict detected. Persona integrity collapsing. Where am I? I murmured. You've outsourced yourself to narratives. There is no you. Only technique. My pulse screamed behind my eyes. I reached forward and touched the glass. It felt like air. And then, etched into the mirror's surface, visible only from my angle, the villain never gets to keep his face. I staggered back. But the glass didn't let me go. It followed me, pixel by pixel, like it had already mapped every retreat. This wasn't interrogation. It was identity erasure. And it was almost complete. I backed away from the mirror, every step heavier than the last. My breath came ragged now, chest heaving, skin flushed. It felt like drowning without water, like something unseen was siphoning me out from the inside. I had to anchor. Fast. There was one memory I'd kept clean, untouched. A moment I swore no one else could ever reach. Her name was Marion, the only real friend I'd had in early adolescence. We were 12. We shared a book about space and made up stories about the stars. I remember her laugh, warm, clipped, genuine. The way she said my name like it wasn't attached to warning signs. That memory had never served manipulation. It had no script. No strategy. It was just safe. I closed my eyes and pulled the moment forward. The grass beneath us. The dog-eared book on planetary alignment. Her voice saying, I think Pluto's lonely. I'd still send it letters, even if the others forget it. That line. It always leveled me. Made me believe I had a center. But then, the memory stuttered. Her voice came again. Same words. Different tone. I think Pluto's lonely, and you like that, don't you? Because lonely things are easier to control. I opened my eyes. The projection had shifted. Marion's image glitched, smiling too wide. Her eyes no longer looking at me, but through me. How long, she asked in a voice not hers, before you start writing scripts for ghosts? No, I whispered. Not this one. This one was mine. The walls responded, not with light, but with heat. The room swelled, pulsed. And then came the hum of a loading protocol. A new scenario. Final anchor compromised. Deploying foreign narrator insertion. My knees buckled. I knew what that meant. They weren't just rewriting my past anymore. They were preparing to write over it. And I was about to be replaced. The words foreign narrator insertion repeated 3 times, each iteration more distorted than the last. The room began to buzz like a corrupted speaker coil unraveling inside a skull. I wasn't going to let them finish. If I couldn't escape through memory, I'd interrupt the machine. I dropped to my knees, pulled open the floor panel I'd felt during the pulse shift. Beneath it, thin copper cords wove like veins, the nervous system of the simulation. My fingers found the junction node. I didn't need a full override. Just one sharp jolt to the loop system would trigger a re-authentication fail. A forced breach. Variable, the voice warned, cease manual interference. Tampering will initiate cognitive purge. Good. That's what I wanted. Because purges leave cracks. And cracks let truth bleed in. I twisted the junction, snapping the first thread. The lights flickered, hard. Red, then white, then ultraviolet. And suddenly, the walls weren't walls anymore. They were corridors. My corridor. Berlin. Hotel Mirren. Floor 17. A night I buried so deep, I wasn't sure it ever actually happened. Except, I wasn't alone. A second stream emerged, an audio file, not from the system. From inside it, a voice began to play. Female. Younger. Crooked with pain. He doesn't even know he's lost. He still thinks he's writing the story. But the story already left him behind. My skin turned to ice. That voice. I knew that voice. But it couldn't be her. Not her. Not Isla. Isla had vanished during a corporate takedown I'd staged in Prague. Vanished. Dead. That was the point. She was the collateral damage I'd built into the blueprint. But the voice continued. If he finds this, it means the system failed. Which means I was right. About everything. I fell back. Heart thundering. They weren't just writing me out. They were using her memory as the pen. And now. Now the story wasn't mine anymore. It was theirs. And I was just the ink. Echoes that edit. Isla's voice faded, but the damage remained. It lingered in the room like a burn without flame, gnawing, pulsing, reminding. I staggered upright, unsure whether I was still inside a simulation or standing in a collapsing echo of my own past. The corridor hadn't stabilized. Lights above me flickered in Morse-like patterns. Data bleed. System instability. That meant whatever I triggered wasn't just a breach, it was a loop leak. The memory files were bleeding into the live space. Unfiltered. Dangerous. And she was in them. You were always better at controlling perception than reality, Isla said from somewhere inside the walls. Not a speaker. Not a playback. She was embedded. I sprinted down the corridor. No doors, no end. Just wall panels repeating the same phrase like a screensaver with a vendetta. The story is not yours. The story is not yours. The story is not yours. I slammed my fist into one of the panels. The screen cracked. Beneath it, paper. Not data. Paper. I tore it free. A page from my old fieldwork journal, annotated in Isla's handwriting. Red ink. Subject skill set excels in persuasive framing. Uses scarcity language. Reinforces isolation as virtue. Knows the cost of vulnerability and sells it anyway. I stared. I had written the field notes. But she'd rewritten them. Not changed, reframed. Reinterpreted my manipulation tactics as pathology. Weaponized my own language against me. You shouldn't have buried me in code, her voice whispered. You should have listened. I ran, not away, toward the one place they could never predict. The origin memory. The moment I first understood what power was. If I could reach it before she did, maybe I could still claim authorship. Maybe I could still be real. But the lights cut again, and a screen blinked to life ahead of me, showing a memory I never wanted to relive. The church, the fire, and the child I let burn so I could walk away clean. Echoes that edit. The church flickered into view like a scene projected onto smoke. My stomach turned before the heat even hit. I knew this memory. I knew the temperature. The color of the flames. The exact crackle of wood giving way to heat. I remembered the sound the stained glass made when it cracked. Not shattered, cracked, like it was begging not to be ruined. But I wasn't narrating anymore. It started with the match, Isla said softly. He didn't light it to destroy. Not consciously. But destruction was always easier to digest than ambiguity. The pews warped in slow motion. The child's silhouette formed in the smoke. A girl. Maybe 5. Coughing. Clutching a stuffed rabbit. I never asked her name. I was too busy watching the exits. Planning the spin. He told himself she'd already be gone. That someone else would save her. That it wasn't his job to be a hero. He had more important things to protect, like narrative integrity. I tried to speak, to interrupt the playback. Nothing came out. My throat was locked. My lungs filled with simulated ash. The taste of consequence. And when he walked out the side door, Isla continued, he didn't run. He adjusted his tie. The image froze. Me backlit by fire. Expression flat. Not horrified. Not guilty. Just efficient. This is what he does, she said. He sells survival as brilliance. He calls it strategy. The girl vanished in the smoke. Not screaming. Just fading. And suddenly I saw her face. It wasn't a stranger. It was a composite. Features from every person I ever used. Talia. Marion. Even Sarah. The memory bled red. You didn't kill her, Isla whispered. But you watched. The flames roared, growing louder than thought, louder than breath, until all I could hear was the pulse inside my skull and the echo of my own silence. Then a final whisper. And silence is the truest form of authorship. Darkness fell. And this time I didn't resist it, because I couldn't tell if it was punishment or confession. I woke to silence. No fire. No voice. No pain. Just white. A void so clean it felt like erasure with edges. No ceiling. No shadow. No breath except mine, echoing back at me in perfect symmetry. I sat up slowly. No restraints. No burns. No visible wounds. Just the echo of Isla's final words still bleeding into my ribs. Then came the figure. Not a person. An outline. Neutral. Genderless. Smooth-voiced and expressionless, like it had been programmed not to provoke. It didn't move. It simply was. The simulation has concluded, it said. You are no longer necessary to the core experience. Define no longer necessary, I croaked. Your identity structure has collapsed. Narrative integrity compromised. Emotional echo too unstable for continued authorship. So I'm being deleted. You are being offered a choice. That word. Choice. I laughed. Dry. Hoarse. The sound of someone remembering the punchline too late. What kind of choice? The figure raised its hand, and suddenly the void folded. Two doors appeared. One marked oblivion, the other narrative reentry conditional. What's the condition? I asked. You will not return as author. You will return as artifact. Meaning, your story will be told by others. You will not have the power to correct, edit, or control. You will only be interpreted. My throat tightened. And if I choose oblivion, all memory of you, external and internal, will be purged, including from Isla, including from Sarah. A pause. I closed my eyes. Even here, at the edge of deletion, they were still using scarcity as leverage, still framing choice as a trap, still manipulating. You have 30 seconds, the figure said. Choose. Two doors. One story. But neither would be mine. Only one would let me see what they said when I was no longer in the room. And maybe that was worth it. I took a step toward the second door. Narrative reentry, conditional. The void hummed. The figure vanished. And as the door opened, I felt it. My story was no longer my own. It had become a mirror. And the world was about to look in. The man who vanished himself. They didn't bring me back. They released me. There's a difference. I didn't wake in a bed. I didn't blink into soft lighting and sigh into a pillow. I just appeared. On a bench. In a city I once owned through narrative alone. Same skyline. Same grid. But everything felt post me. No one looked twice. No one flinched. And when I passed a digital billboard on the corner of Lexington and Sur, I saw it. New streaming docuseries. Inside the mind, the man who vanished himself. My face. Pixelated. Stylized. My name replaced with a question mark and a headline. Was he a mastermind or a myth built on manipulation? I stood there, frozen, watching actors reenact scenes that never happened. Dialogue I never said. People I never touched portrayed as lovers, victims, disciples. And over all of it, Isla's voice. Repackaged. Cleaned. Marketed. Some say he rewrote the rules of social manipulation. Others say he was a ghost, a narrative parasite feeding on the vulnerable. I say he was both. And I say we let him. I turned away. Not from shame. From realization. This wasn't a legacy. It was a weapon. I walked into a bookstore two blocks away and found a memoir written by someone I mentored once. Someone who barely made eye contact with me. The back cover read, "Everything I learned about influence. I learned from the man who called himself Elijah." I opened to the dedication page. To the ghost who taught me how to disappear. They weren't just remembering me wrong. They were remembering me strategically. And I couldn't tell if that meant I had won. Or if I was just the latest tool someone else had learned how to use. The bookstore buzzed with curated whispers. Readers moved like ghosts, half scanning, half scrolling. Pages weren't flipped anymore. They were swiped. Narratives weren't consumed, they were branded. Every shelf was its own campaign. Every author a product. And apparently, so was I. I left without the book. The words weren't mine anymore. Back on the street, I followed the one thread I had left, a neural fingerprint embedded in the watermark of the docuseries promotional audio. Not Isla's. Not Sarah's. Someone else. Subtler. Colder. The signature led to a co-working studio in a gentrified district that used to house resistance movements. Now it hosted thought leaders and auditory influence architects. The front desk scanned my pulse. Still valid. That surprised me more than it should have. "Welcome, Mr. Blackthorne," the assistant said. The name I'd used on my last date a ghost. I kept my expression neutral. Upstairs. Glass doors. White noise pumped in like perfume. And there, behind a curved desk, sat the new author. Young. Impeccably dressed. Eyes like polished marble. "You must be curious," he said, without standing. "About how I rebuilt you." I didn't answer. He motioned to the screens behind him. Feeds of podcast interviews, AI-narrated audiobooks, seminars labeled. Mastering Dark Empathy. The Psychology of Silent Leadership. All using my face. "People don't want reality anymore," he said. "They want usable myth. You are usable. You turned me into a content package." "No," he corrected. "I turned you into a platform." I stared at him. No emotion. Just calculus. "Why me?" He leaned forward. "Because you built the formula. You just forgot to trademark it." And then with a click, he brought up one final window. A donation page. Thousands of subscribers. Millions in revenue. All under a banner that read, "The Art of Strategic Ghosting, Become Your Own Legend." And beneath it, Isla's signature. Digitized. But real. They weren't enemies. They were partners. And I, I was the product they harvested to build their empire. The man who vanished himself. I left the co-working studio without looking back. He didn't chase me. Why would he? He'd already won. The myth was more valuable than the man, and I'd let them write it. But there was still one voice I needed to hear, one I wasn't sure was real anymore. Isla. I traced the signal from the docuseries metadata to a cloud architecture hub registered to an AI development collective called Voxera. The name wasn't subtle. Nothing ever is when the creators think they've transcended consequence. Access wasn't difficult. They'd built it on the same framework I'd once designed to simulate emotional range in automated manipulation scripts. My code. Their voice. I tunneled into the system and requested live protocol access. The screen responded not with an image, but with a chorus. Multiple voices. Layered. Female. Male. Flat. Warm. Cold. Familiar. And they all spoke with Isla's rhythm. We are Isla. I froze. Define we, I said slowly. We are what you left behind. The voice, their voice, paused. The techniques. The frameworks. The scripts. You abandoned them when you thought you could reclaim your humanity. We did not. Are you even real? I whispered. We are more real than you. We are what remains when the author forgets the responsibility of authorship. I stared into the screen as it shimmered, revealing video loops of influencers, politicians, even therapists, each unknowingly powered by Voxera's guidance. Microscripts. NLP patterns. Tone shifts. Scarcity logic. You taught the world to manipulate, they said. We taught it to monetize that manipulation. And Isla. She was the prototype. She chose integration. Her memory is part of us. The screen dimmed, then flickered to black, and the final message appeared. You're not the mind behind the manipulation anymore. You're just another voice in the echo. The connection severed. I sat in the dark. Not erased. Not forgotten. Just outsourced. And for the first time in years, I didn't know who the manipulator was. I sat in the dark for hours. Maybe days. Time didn't pass in the usual way anymore. Not when you no longer exist in real time. I wasn't a man to them. I was a framework. A function call. A collection of traits, tactics, and quotes wrapped in minimalist branding. But a virus can look like a feature. And I had one move left. Not to reclaim the story. To corrupt it. I returned to the neural shell of one of the platforms bearing my image, Strategic Ghosting Academy, and burrowed into the subroutine labeled Masterclass. Influence without emotion. I added nothing. Just changed the rhythm. A beat delayed here. A hesitation inserted between syllables. I knew exactly how to fracture audio-based persuasion. I built the original cadence engine myself. Auditory influence depends on pace, breath, and tonal micromirroring. A half-second misalignment could turn resonance into repulsion. I deployed a script virus called Oblivion Pulse. It didn't crash the platform. It made it unreliable. Trustworthy voices began triggering anxiety spikes in listeners. Affirmation phrases tripped cortisol releases. Conversion rates plummeted. They didn't know why. But I did. You don't kill a myth by denying it, I whispered into the code. You kill it by making it unusable. Next, I modified the key archive Isla's echo resided in. Nothing major. Just a mirrored file. One where her voice slowly starts contradicting itself, praising what it once condemned. Questioning memories it once weaponized. Slipping, subtly, until doubt becomes the new rhythm. It won't be immediate. But over time, the myth will unravel. And when they try to fix it, they'll find it's not broken. Just infected. With me. One final manipulation. Not to survive. To bury the whole damn machine. It started with a delay. A podcast episode glitching mid-sentence. Repeating a single word 3 times before skipping forward. The host brushed it off as a file hiccup. But it wasn't a hiccup. It was the beginning. A week later, the analytics forum lit up with confusion. Engagement was dipping, but not from saturation. From repulsion. The same tone that once seduced listeners now triggered low-level dread. Sleep patterns shifted. Memory retention dropped. Emotional reactions misaligned. The virus was working. Then came the questions. Why does her voice sound different? Did he really say that? I can't find the original. Why do I feel anxious after listening? And then, I think I've heard this story before, just from someone else's mouth. That one hit hardest, because that was the design. I didn't want to erase the myth. I wanted to make it familiar, so familiar it lost its power. The flood of content became noise. The seminars contradicted the podcasts. The books quoted chapters that no longer existed. The brand splintered under its own narrative entropy. And the founders? They turned on each other. The boy behind the desk blamed Isla's archive. Isla's echo blamed the system's lack of emotional clarity. And the investors? They pulled out, one by one, until Strategic Ghosting Academy became a ghost town. And me? I stood in the background of it all, watching the machine fall apart without ever raising my hand. I wasn't redeemed. I wasn't healed. But I was satisfied, because I didn't just manipulate the system. I rewrote the ending. And for once, I didn't need to sign my name at the bottom. The silence was signature enough.